Hello, and welcome to Sobercast, where we provide AA speaker meetings and workshops in podcast format. We're an ad-free podcast, and if you enjoy listening, please help us be self-supporting by visiting Sobercast.com, look for the donate link, and drop a dollar or two into our virtual basket. We hope you enjoy the podcast. Have a great day.
Good morning. I'm an Alanine from West Blockton, Alabama, and my name's Bo. Hey, y'all. Boy, are we ever glad to be here this weekend. We've been looking forward to this one, and hey, if that's my sponsor, you tell her I got a sport coat on. didn't quite make the tie, but I got a sport coat on. yeah, we needed to get out of town for a day or two, and we love going places together today. And so thank you for inviting us to your party. Because you see, that as I introduce or tell my story today, you'll see that I was introduced to this way of life September 4th, 1982 at the party. And Shorty and I have been going to all the parties that we could since then. We fell in love with you that night. That thing about attraction rather than promotion, it really, really works. And so what I want to say to you, if you're fairly new and this is your first convention, or maybe if you're not so new and this is your first convention, I hope that before you leave here, you get that feeling that you've been at a party. Because let me tell you what, that's what I'm doing this weekend. I'm celebrating my recovery and your recovery. This is the party side. So thank you for allowing us to be here. There's another thank you or two that I want to say before I get into Al-Anon. I got about 3.5 hours worth of Al-Anon to talk about, so I'm going to hurry through the. But right quick, if you're sitting in this room with me this morning, and you are a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, from the very bottom of this Al-Anon's heart, I want to say thank you. And I don't think we're doing that enough in Al-Anon today. But from the bottom of my heart, I want to say thank you, and thank you to AA for two reasons. Number one, thank you for being there July 29th, when my gal, 1982, when my gal reached out her hand. Because you see, the bottle had her, and I couldn't do anything about it. I was driving myself crazy trying to find a way to get her sober and keep her sober. And I couldn't do it. In July 29, 1982, she reached her hand out to AA, and the hand of AA was there. And you took her in, and you put your arms around her, and you loved her back to health. And she didn't have to die from a fatal disease that we didn't even know she had. How can I ever repay the debt of gratitude that I feel to Alcoholics Anonymous? I want to thank Alcoholics Anonymous for another reason. I want to thank you for having this 12-step program in place for us, so that when Al-Anon was born in 1951, and we said, can we have your 12-step way of life? You said, sure you can. And you threw your arms open, and they said, here's what we want you to do, family member. We want you to come in here, learn how to take these 12 spiritual principles, implement them in your life, and learn how to live happy, joyous, and free, and then not be dependent on what another person does or does not do. Golly, we are so blessed. We are so blessed. And we all can look around us and we can see people that are in trouble and they don't have our way of life. And I feel so for them because, man, we have a place to go. We have something to do. We have people to talk to. Thank God it's here. Thank God it's here. When I introduced myself to you, I introduced myself as an Al-Anon. Now, it's sweating here. I made it up here with it on. Now, I want to talk about being an Al-Anon for just a few minutes. Because, you see, there's two or three things that I have to do in my life today on a real regular basis. in order to stand up here this morning and tell you that I am an active member of Al-Anon. And I want to share two or three of those things with you right quick. You got it? Okay. First thing I have to do in order to tell you I'm a member of Al-Anon is I suit up and show up and occupy that chair in an Al-Anon meeting on a real regular basis. Now, I know that this is a program of action. I know you can't get it by osmosis because I tried. The first 7 months that I was around this thing, not in it, but around it, I was suiting up and showing up and occupying that chair in a whole lot of meetings. When I got there, I'd listen real close, find out who the old timers were, try to sit by them, hoping maybe something they had would rub off on me. So I know that you can't get it by osmosis. I know this is a program of action, but I still believe that it begins with suiting up, showing up, and occupying that chair. Let me explain it to you this way. I can take that chair and I can take it back to the back of our lot out there in West Blockton, Alabama. And I can put it in the middle of that chicken coop. And I can occupy that chair in the middle of that chicken coop every day for 20 years. And guess what? Yeah, I still won't be a chicken. But hear me now. If I do that every day for 20 years, at the end of that time, I'm going to know a whole lot about chickens. And I'm going to know how the successful chickens are getting it done. So you see, it starts by suiting up, showing up, and occupying that chair. And that meeting with those winners that were there for me, watching y'all, listening to y'all, and I began to get an idea of the things that Bo was going to have to do to be grown up like you are. So yeah, it's a program of action, but it begins with suiting up and showing up. Next thing I have to do in order to tell you I'm an Al-Anon, and remember, I'm just sharing with you what worked for me. This is my story. Is I have to have a home group. Now, when I got here, September 4th, 1982, I didn't need a home group. When I got here, I didn't need Al-Anon. You see, there was nothing wrong with me. We had just picked her up from a treatment center, and she had the problem, and if she didn't drink anymore, we were going to be okay. And I believed that with all my heart. And I walked around with a big smile on my face, because you see, she was sober when she came out of that treatment center. Al-Anon, we call it denial. AA, they call it delusion. And I think delusion is when you're living the denial. And that's where I was, because I had a big smile on my face telling you that I didn't need this. I didn't need it. And it took me 7 months of coming to meetings and suiting up and showing up and occupying on a real regular basis before I got sick enough that I had to take some action. Now, my home group is the Wednesday night discussion group there in Bessemer, Alabama. We call it the Harmony Group, because if you show up on a good Wednesday night when everybody's getting along pretty good and there ain't no big problems out there, you find a little harmony there. Yeah, you'll find a little harmony. So, but I think it's necessary that we have that home group now. That treatment center that my wife went through, that she talked about up there, they had something called Family Week. And remember, this was 1982, so it was a lot different back then. You could do more things. And they asked me and those two teenagers, Mike and Sissy, who were 15 and 13, to come up there and move in the treatment center and the family wing, and live up there from Monday until Friday and be a part of the family program. Now, they call it Family Week. I call it Hell Week, because that's what it was. But there were some important things that happened up there during Hell Week that really made an impression on me. And the first thing I want to share with you that happened up there is I heard one of those counselors up there make this statement. Said the ones that stay sober when they leave here are the ones who go to AA. And in the snap of your fingers, my job in life changed. Yeah. Because see, I've already told you, I was convinced beyond a shadow of a doubt that if she didn't drink, we were going to be okay. He just told me if she went to AA, she wouldn't drink. So I became the driver, the real driver. And it was my job then to make sure that she got to her AA meetings. Okay? Now, right before we left up there, I heard another comment by another counselor that made a big impression. And the counselor said, it's a good idea to go to 90 meetings in 90 days. We did. We did. But now, if you've listened to me, you know we weren't going for me. Okay? I was going to make sure that she was there. And we got busy. We were living in Hueytown at that time, and we got busy going to Bessemer and Birmingham and to Tuscaloosa, making those 90 meetings in 90 days. And we'd show up and we'd sit right down there on that front row, and that speaker say something that was important, I'd pop her with that elbow. Yeah. Making sure that she heard what she needed to hear. Now, I was listening real close. Because, see, I knew that she was still in the fog. And that she was going to have questions when we got home. And I was going to have to answer them. Yeah. So here we are. We're not missing a meeting. 90 and 90. And then we get to Bessemer there one night, which 7 months later was to become my home group. Wasn't then. Didn't have a home group then. And we got there, and those guys met me at the door, those AA guys. And I found out y'all got real tunnel vision about a couple of areas of your program. And one area you're really serious about is closed meetings. Because you met us at the door that night, and you said, hey, Bo, you can't come into this meeting tonight. It's a closed meeting for alcoholics only. I said, oh, guys, come on. You don't understand. It's my job. And they did not relent. And they said, however, there's a meeting going on in that room right over there. And you need to go to that meeting. Well, of course, you know where they were pointing. They were pointing to the Al-Anon room. Now, like I say, I didn't have a home group, and I did not have old-time sponsorship at that time. Okay. I was still sponsoring myself. I was the first 7 months I was here, I was in the ISM. The ISM being I sponsor myself. Now let me tell you about sponsoring yourself. Some of you probably heard this said. And it's right that you have a fool for a sponsor. There's no doubt. But let me tell you something else. You got a fool for a pigeon. Ha! And we'd be riding off down the road and we'd call a meeting and we'd have a sponsor and a pigeon and then we'd have that committee that all of us have up here. They're all Al-Anons. And we could have some of the doggonest meetings you ever seen riding down the road. But see, it took me 7 months to get old time sponsorship. And the first thing that Jim and Fran told me their investment when I asked them to sponsor me. One of the very first things they told me was, Bo, you're going to begin to show up for every meeting you go to at least 30 minutes early, prepared to stay until it's over. Now, most AA and Al-Anon meetings are over in an hour, but not all of them are. And the way we do it here at Bessemer is we show up 30 minutes early and we stay till it's over. And I can't tell you how many times we'd be there making another pot of coffee at midnight because there was a husband and a wife there. There was a family there. There was somebody there that needed help. And we didn't let them leave that place without the help that they needed. Old time sponsorship. Old time sponsorship. Yeah. Let me tell you about showing up 30 minutes early. Oh, man. If you show up 30 minutes early, you get to chair a lot of meetings. Oh, no, I don't mean run the meeting from up here. I mean set the chairs up. Get the room ready. Yeah. These don't just happen. Somebody's got to show up early and do it. If you show up early, you get to make a whole lot of coffee. Just exactly like you like it. Yeah. But the great part is, if you show up early, you're always there when that newcomer crosses that door. And you'd be one of the very first ones to extend the love of our way of life to them. Show up early and stay late. Didn't have it that night when they told me to go over there to that room. It was, looked at my watch, it's 3 minutes to eight for an 8 o'clock meeting. Walked over there to that door, stopped, the door to our Al-Anon room is at the back. Stopped there and took a quick head count. 23 women. One other guy. And he was sitting way down front, and there was an empty chair right beside him. So I strolled off down front, sat down beside him. No time to introduce ourselves or anything. They was opening the meeting. Meeting, we go through the meeting, and we close the meeting, and we stand up. And he sticks his hands out, says, "Hey, Bo, my name's Kirvin." I said, "Kirvin, it's good to meet you, and it's good to know that there's one other guy here." And he started laughing. He said, "Oh, Bo, I'm moving to Panama City, Florida in the morning." He said, "This is my last meeting here." And you know what? He ain't been back. He was telling the truth. But see, that was just God taking care of Bo, and I would have told you God didn't know where I lived at that time in my life. Because I was so sick, it took all 23 of them women from me. And if Kirby had been there and had a problem, I don't know what we'd have done. So God didn't send Kirby out of town, he sent him out of state. Yeah. And so then those women started walking up to me. And the first one walked up to me and I stuck my hand out, introduced myself. She pushed my hand away. She wanted to give me a hug. Let me tell you, I wasn't real huggable when I got here. Today, I believe in the spiritual healing power in our hugs. I do that. But I didn't then. So she moved on out of the way, and the next one came up there, stuck my hand out, she shoved my hand, same thing. Third one came up there, and I said, "Oh, hold on a minute, wait a minute. We might as well have an understanding right now. I know this is probably a great meeting, a great thing you got going here. And I know that some of you women have probably gotten a lot of good out of it. But you see, I don't need it. And I'm not going to be coming in here much. The only reason I'm in here tonight is they wouldn't let me stay out there. But you see, my wife is sober, and if she don't drink again, we're going to be okay." See? Nobody argue with me. Old timers. One of those seasoned veterans stepped forward, and she said, "Come with me, Bo." She took me back to the back of the room. And she set a chair right inside the door of that Al-Anon room. She said, "We want you to come back every time you can, and every time that you need to, and every time that you feel like it. And any time that you come to an Al-Anon meeting in this room, that will be your seat. That's as far in this room as you have to come. You don't have to come down here and sit in the circle unless you choose to, but nobody will make you. Nobody will force you. Come in, get inside the room, and sit down in this chair. That's as far as you have to come." Yeah. That's old time stuff. And then they did something that they still won't admit to today, but I figured it out. They assigned one of those gals to me. Now, she changes every month because we're an old group. We were born in 61, and we believe in rotation. And here's what her job is. When we close our meetings, this is how we close our meetings at my home group. We close our meetings by standing, holding hands, and saying the Lord's Prayer. Now, we're not ever going to change that. We've not found it necessary to have any group conscience meetings about it or discussions about it. This is the way the Bessemer Al-Anon Discussion Harmony Group closes their meeting. Being raised by old-timers, I've been taught I can't compete with him, I'm sorry. And being raised by old-timers, I've been taught that the Lord's Prayer ends with the word Amen. Consequently, I'm not allowed to say anything after the word Amen. So, we get ready to close our meeting. Well, I've been raised in that Baptist church, and I knew about the Lord's Prayer, and I like the Lord's Prayer, so meeting that we'd be ready to close, and they'd make the circle. Well, if I'd been back there in the chair, I'd come up there and join in the circle, say the Lord's Prayer. Well, while I had my eyes closed saying the Lord's Prayer, whoever was assigned to me that month would slip out of the circle and get between me and the door. Now, see, they're going to teach me how to hug without ever telling me I had to hug. I'd hug one to get out of there. I wasn't going to hug 23. But I'd hug one to get out the door. And, of course, every time she hugged me, she'd whisper in my ear. She said, "Now you keep coming back, Bob, because we need you." Oh, God, I wanted to help anyhow. If you needed me, I'd see if I couldn't show up a little more regular. Yeah. And then they began to very gently put those Al-Anon hooks in me and began to keep me here until my miracle could happen. See, and the first hook was those hooks. The second hook was a hook called laughter. I hope we don't ever forget the laughter when we first get here. There had not been a lot of laughter in our lives. Several months prior to getting here. And when I got here, I began to hear this laughter. And it wasn't a laughter of the kind, you know, that hurts your teeth. Ha, ha, ha. No, it wasn't that kind. It was belly laughter. Real, true laughter. And that first meeting that I was in that night, it was full of laughter. It was a speaker meeting, and one of our seasoned veterans was telling her story that night. And when they got the meeting open and they introduced her, she got up there and she said, "Hi, my name's Doris, and it's been 14 years since I had to plan a murder." Yeah. The whole room erupted in laughter. Everybody except me. I'm sitting down there in the front row, and I said, "By God, I'd never admit that out loud. No way." Because I was just like y'all and the rest of them. I'd go kill her and tell God she died. Yeah. Let me tell you how special laughter has become to me this past 31 years in this thing. And I want to share this with you because you can start doing it yourself. I got a God that loves me so much that He just performs miracles in my life on a regular basis. Some of them are my miracles, some of them are your miracles. And even your miracles, He has opened up my eyes and my ears and my heart to where I can now see them as they're happening. And one of the biggest miracles that I see and get to watch in Al-Anon is with the newcomer. See, the newcomer comes into our meeting and they're not laughing. Huh, they're frowning. They're scared. They don't know what this is. They're full of guilt. They've been blamed. They're full of worry. Is this going to work? We've tried everything else. And they're not smiling at us. And our job at that point, as Al-Anon, is to very gently, very softly, embrace them with the love of our program as much as they will allow us to do. and get them to come back. Come back. They come back to four or five meetings, and then you see them walk in one night, and the frown's gone. Maybe they're not smiling and laughing, but the frown is gone. And at that point, very quietly, I say, oh, thank you, God. There's another miracle happening, and that woman don't even know it. But you're allowing me to be a part of it. A month later, she comes in, somebody says something funny, and she breaks out laughing and shows us her teeth. Said, my goodness, God, another miracle. Another miracle. And these are happening around us all the time. So get your eyes and your ears and your heart open. Start enjoying them. Start enjoying them. Laughter. Laughter. The last hook that I'll share with you, and then we'll move on, is a hook that's become the most important thing in my life today. And I didn't know what it was when it first started happening, but it started happening on the first night. And it's a hook called unconditional love. I knew that y'all treated me different, because I knew that you never asked anything of me. Everywhere I'd ever been in my life, people had wanted something from me. And I had to come up with something I needed from them so we could trade it off. You know, you live your life that way? Sure we did. And then I get here, and you guys and gals never ask anything of me. Every time I walk in the room, the very first thing you said was, hey, what can we do for you? What do you need? How can we help you? And this was different. Different. I liked it, but I didn't fully understand it. Then I went to a meeting one night, and guess what the subject was, topic was? Unconditional love. And at this point, then I could really, really identify. So I decided, I didn't tell anybody, I just decided that I was going to appoint myself as the king of sopping up unconditional love in the southeastern United States. I was going to be the best there was. And of course, being a good Al-Anon, the next thought came to my mind was, well, if you're going to be that good at sopping it up, how good are you going to be at giving it away? So I set out to find out all I could about unconditional love so I could be the best there was at giving it away. And I began to go to conventions like this, and I began to seek out the old-timers, not just Al-Anon, but AA. Seek out the old-timers and question them and asking them about unconditional love. And so then it wasn't too long, about 6 years after I was here, that being a male Al-Anon, that I began to get invitations to go speak. So I had gotten an invitation to go speak in San Diego, California at their spring roundup. And I was sitting in there on a Friday night, still didn't have my answer about unconditional love, was still on the search. And I was sitting in there on Friday night, AA speaker opening up the conference. And he was a well-known speaker, and I'd heard a lot about him. So I'm listening to him real close. And so he gets down in part of his talk, and he says, oh, by the way, he said, I want to tell you about the most important thing in my life today. Now, this was a guy with 35 years sobriety. He said, I want to tell you about the most important thing in my life today. And he didn't say getting his family back. He didn't say getting his job back. He said, the most important thing in my life today is my relationship with God. Yeah. And he said, I call that the vertical. He said, now my relationship with you, I call that the horizontal. He said, what I found out in the past 35 years is that as long as I am okay vertically, I'm okay horizontally. And when I begin to have trouble and problems horizontally, it has nothing to do with you. It has to do with me and my relationship with God. And I'm out of kilter. For some reason, I'm not as spiritually fit as I need to be at that time. And so my job then is to get with my sponsor, get with my spiritual mentor, do some reading, some talking, and some praying, and get myself back where I'm spiritually fit. And he said, when I get back where I'm spiritually fit, he said, then all of a sudden those problems that I was having with you, they've just gone away. They're just gone. They're not big anymore. They've just gone away. And so he said, I get up every morning of my life, and he said, I start my day by talking with God. And in that talk with God, he said, I ask God to help make me the best child of God that I can be today. Just today. Just today. And he said, then all I got to do, he said, I put it all in God's hands then. He said, all I got to do is make the big decisions. You know, about do I need to vacuum? Does the truck need washed? Does the grass need cut? God takes care of the rest. God takes care of the rest. And that leaves me wide open, you see, for God's love. For God's love. And when I am spiritually fit, God loves you through me. He uses me as a channel of His love. We're just going to call everybody today. But we're going to get through this. God uses me as a channel of His love. So then, my challenge to you is, I want you to work on your relationship with God. And I want you to become the best child of God that you can become, so that God can use you as a channel of His love. And God will love me through you. And then right before he closed that part, he said, oh, by the way, God's love is unconditional. And I said, I'll be darned. Here I've been running all over the United States trying to figure out how I can be the best that I can be at giving away unconditional love. And all I got to do is be the best child of God that I can be. Because you see, God's the master at unconditional love. That's it. That ain't a bad deal for a guy that came here 31 years ago to learn how to keep her sober. It just ain't a bad deal at all. And these hooks kept me here for 7 months until one day I had my, I guess you would call it my moment of clarity. And we'll talk about that moment of clarity in just a minute. But there's two more things I want to tell you that I do on a very special, on a very regular basis to be able to be, say, I'm an Al-Anon. Number one is I'm sponsored. I'm sponsored. And number two that comes with that is the privilege to be a sponsor. And that's exciting. And if you want to get in this program, get through the steps and start sponsoring. I'm telling you, you're talking about a ride. Lord have mercy. And, you know, and I hear these folks talk about, well, I work a step a month, and I don't understand that. And what I know is that I might work the steps three times in 1 year if I'm sponsoring three guys through the steps, because every time I take one of you through it, I'm in it myself. I'm in it myself. The other thing is that I work a tenth step every day. Not every night, every day. All during the day, and that keeps me out of having to do inventories over and over again. If you, my God, if you do a 10-step, none of it backs up. You handle it. Anyhow, another story, another day. So I'm sponsored, and I sponsor. And the last thing I do in order to tell you I'm a member of this way of life is I take those 12 spiritual principles that we read them up here as steps. 12 spiritual principles, and I implement them in my life on a daily basis, turning my will and my life over to God and trying to be the best child of God that I can be on a daily basis. And these are the things I do today in order to tell you I'm an Al-Anon. Now, we don't have any time at all for me to spend in Hyatt Waz. I'm sorry. We just don't have time. However, I feel like I'm standing in a room of experts on Hyatt Waz. And we... So maybe what we need to talk about was how it's been going. And September 4th, 1982, picked up Shirley. That's Saturday, Labor Day weekend. Picked up Shirley at the treatment center. I got mad at the treatment center. Got a resentment. Told her. Said, how in the hell can you let her out on a drinking weekend? I said, my God, you ought to have kept her to Monday. You know, telling them how to do their business. And 1982, I had an aunt and uncle in Bessemer A. sobriety. And in 1982, recovering people were still part of treatment centers. So those people out there at that treatment center knew my aunt and uncle. So they knew where to send us. They sent us right to Bessemer A.A. We couldn't go home. Had to go to Bessemer A.A. And we met up with a bunch of y'all, and we went 40 more miles down the road to Tuscaloosa for the Tuscaloosa Al-Anon A.A. anniversary. We convoyed to that meeting. We don't convoy anymore. I miss that. Well, let me tell you about that convoy we had that day. Now, all I can tell you is it grows as it goes. I'm up to now where there's about 85 vehicles in that convoy. It was two doors and four doors and Suburbans and taxi cabs and a wrecker and motorcycles and not a one of them had an air conditioner at work. Every one of them was a drunk vehicle. They wasn't a straight piece of sheet metal nowhere. We had enough people for 100 vehicles. We started getting loaded up, and the windows was rolled down, and legs was sticking out windows. And I told Shirley, I said, get on here to the side, honey. That's going to be the doggonest fight in a minute here that you've ever seen. Nobody fought. Everybody laughed. We cut up. We had fun, and down to Tuscaloosa we went. And when we got down there, we walked into that room. There was 500 of y'all. And y'all was dressed up. You was cleaned up. You had on foo-foo juice. And you was running around that place having the time of your life. And me and Shirley and two kids, we didn't understand you that night. But when we got home at midnight that night, Shirley's first night home in 38 nights, and we sat in the middle of the floor with a bag of chocolate chip cookies and a gallon of milk. And we talked about y'all till the sun came up. And somebody asked not too long ago, you talked about it till the sun came up? I said, yeah. I said, we knew it because, you see, we now had the curtains open. And the front door was open. And we could see the sun coming up. We wasn't shutting you out anymore. So we saw the sun come up, and it's been coming up in our house every day since then. And we made a commitment as a family. We didn't know what you had, but it was a heck of a lot better than what we had. And we was going to give this thing our best shot. And it's led us so far to being right here in Albany, Georgia with you today. What a ride. What a ride. Had Aunt Katie waiting on Shirley. She was standing there with a book in her hand. She called it the big book. She said, come on, girl, I'm going to take you in this big book and said, we're going to get in those steps and you're going to grow spiritually and you're going to get well. Sissy fell in love with Alateen, couldn't drag her out. She stayed in Alateen till she was 20 and she came into Al-Anon and she's 44 years old. Today with 31 years of Alateen and Al-Anon. Mike was busy chasing. He did a lot of catching. He was good looking. Looked a lot like me when I was that age. But Mike, boy, if we mentioned going to Panama City or somewhere like that to a convention, he was first in line. And it's just like Shirley said, you live in a home where the spiritual principles are practiced, you're going to be affected. Mike came in school one day, looked at Sissy, said, "Sissy, let's go to your room." Said, "I got to talk to you." Because he knew she was regular in Alateen, and he would talk with her. And they went into Sissy's room, shut the door, and Shirley said they stayed in there a little over an hour. Came out, and Shirley looked at Mike and said, "What was that about?" He said, "Oh, Mom, it was a closed meeting." The three of them are being taken care of, and I'm sitting over there in my chair doing nothing. Getting worse. And that went on for 7 months. And I remember one Saturday morning, it was raining. God, it was raining. I was sitting there in my chair, cup of coffee, and I started hollering at God. Just tell you about my relationship with God. I mean, I was yelling at God. And it was coming out like this. "Come on, God, what's the deal here? I'm doing my part. I'm making sure they all get to their meetings. Me and Shirley are going to 90 and 90. You know, we're changing our way of life. We're trying to do right. Come on, God. All I want to do is play a round of golf. Can't it rain on Wednesday?" And Shirley was standing there at the door. And she said, "Well, are you about through?" And I said, "Yeah." And she said, "Well, who are you going to blame this one on, Bo? I ain't had a drink in 7 months." And that was my moment of clarity. So I went back to Al-Anon the very next meeting. And like I said, Curvin never came back, so there wasn't any guys there. So I went up to this lady named Fran. And I'd been sitting in meetings with her, and I'd been listening to her, and I knew her husband who was sober. I said, "Fran, I'm in trouble, and I need help. Will you help me?" Well, you see, Fran was one of the founders of that group in 1961. She was a past delegate for Alabama Northwest Florida. She was a retired school principal. And there was a discipline side to her that I didn't know existed until I invited her in my life. And so she took me on, and we started on this journey. About 90 days, I needed to talk to a man. She didn't tell me to go get Jim. She told me to go into the AA room and find me a man that was working a good 12-step program. And that we would invite him into this relationship. And I was the one that picked Jim. And so Jim and Fran became my mentors and my guides. And only then did I begin to get a little bit of relief. It wasn't recovery, but it was a little bit of relief. And I'm bouncing along then, and I decide it's time to do an inventory. Now, I didn't think it was necessary to discuss that with Jim and Fran. I guess I was going to surprise them. And without any information or any direction, I started trying to do an inventory. And I couldn't get it done. And by the way, we were going through the steps in the textbook Alcoholics Anonymous. And I became a nervous wreck, a mess. Picked up the phone, called Fran one day, and she was the greatest listener in the world, and she just let me rant and rave till I slowed down a bit. She said, "Bo, this sounds like 5:30. 5:30 meant I had to be at their kitchen table at 5:30 in the afternoon. Fran would have the coffee made, and Jim would walk in the door at 5:30. And there was no excuse for that. When she told me 5:30, it was mandatory. So at 5:30, I'm sitting at their house with a cup of coffee. Jim walks in the door, sits down, says, "Hey, son, what's going on?" I said, "Jim, I'm trying to write an inventory, and I can't get it written. It's a mess. I can't get this inventory done." Before I could say another word, Fran says, "Oh, Bo, you were ranting and raving so hard today, I didn't understand what it was." If you're trying to do an inventory, son, you've got to be in trouble. I said, "How do you know this, Fran?" She said, "Well, son, if you're trying to do step four, you're not through step three yet." And she said, "I've been telling you all along that these steps are numbered for dummies like you." And she said, "You're going to have to do something about your concept of God." Well, see, I hadn't had that judging and punishing God. Sitting up there judging me and punishing me. Jim didn't say another word. He just reached over and took me by the hand, and we started down the hall. We got down there to his office, went in there and sat down at his desk, and he turned around on the shelf, and he brought out a book that said Alcoholics Anonymous on it, the textbook Alcoholics Anonymous. He opened that textbook to the chapter to the agnostic, and he took this Al-Anon into that chapter in that book that afternoon. And it was right there that day that I found the God that I have in my life today. Because you see, in the chapter to the agnostic, it talks about a God of infinite power and of infinite love. And all of a sudden, you see, it was so clear to me that my God was so busy trying to love me and forgive me that he didn't have time to judge me and punish me if he wanted to. And I was released from that. And I had this new concept of God that was to serve me well up through the day. And it's always been adequate. So I got this new concept of God, and I'm off and running now. Running just as hard as I could from God. Because you see, in that Southern Baptist church, when you turned it all over to God, they made you a song director. Or a Sunday school teacher. Sometimes even made you a deacon. And if it was really serious, they'd make you a missionary. And I didn't want anything to do with that. So I ran. Well, let me tell you about God, my God. He loves me so much that he allows me to run just as hard as I want to run. See, God has never taken from me my free will. See, I have to give it to him. Now, he's always there to accept it when I give it to him, but he doesn't reach in and take it. He'll let me reach in and take it back. That's the kind of God I have today. So he just let me take it and run, and I got running so hard I couldn't even stand myself. And the best example I know is the term you hear around AA and Al-Anon. I couldn't get comfortable in my own skin. And so I looked at Shirley one morning and I said, "I don't know what to do." She said, "Well, I don't know what for you to do. You go out and figure that out for yourself." I finally decided I'd go to work. I could be miserable there and get paid. But I couldn't even get to work that Wednesday morning. I pulled out of traffic there in Bessemer, and I sat on the side of the street and I beat on the steering wheel. And what I said was, I said, "God, I don't know what I've got that you can use. And I don't know where we're going to have to go or what we're going to have to do. But God, whatever I've got, wherever we need to go or whatever we need to do, let's get it on, God, because I give up. I surrender. I can't fight you anymore." And spiritual growth began to come in my life. As I look back today, I realize that what I did at 5 minutes to eight that morning is I fired Bo as the general manager of Bo's life. And I looked around and I hired the best general manager available, and that's God. And my biggest job since that morning to right up here when we had prayer right before I talked, my biggest job has been to keep Bo fired and God hired. And as long as I can keep it that way, this thing stays between the ditches. Shirley and Sissy and Mike, they're way ahead of me, but I start chasing them as far as recovery is concerned, and I'm making gains on them, and we're beginning to, our family is coming back together. We're beginning to make some financial recovery, and that's when we started planning this vacation that we're going on in 1988. And of course, as Shirley's already told you, On May 17, 1988, Mike, our 20-year-old son, was killed instantly by a drunk driver. And it was in Fairfield where the wreck was, and we lived in Hewittown. So Fairfield went to Hewittown and got a Hewittown policeman to come to the house with him. And that policeman happened to have been Mike's Little League coach. And he had to come and tell us that Mike wouldn't be coming home. And, I'm going to tell you, Mike and I were okay. And now, I thank you for that. We were okay. When I walked up to his casket on Friday morning to say goodbye to him for the last time, I didn't have to go up there and say, son, I wish we'd done this. Or Mike, we just never did talk about that. No. Because of what you had taught me and what you had taught him, we had discussed it. We had talked it. We were okay. Telling you. He was killed on a Tuesday night at 9 o'clock. Tuesday morning, he was getting ready to go to work. And he came by my chair where I was sitting with a cup of coffee. He said, I'm going to work, Dad. Took about 3 steps toward the front door. Stopped and turned around and looked me dead in the eye. He said, I love you, Dad. And out the door he went. Y'all taught us how to do that. That wasn't unusual. We did that most days. Thank God you were there for us. Thank God. There's not many daddies that can stand up here and share that legacy with you. I'm telling you. That's powerful. That's powerful. So we started this walk through the longest, darkest tunnel that a daddy will ever have to go through. Oh, if something happened to Sissy, it'd be just as long and just as dark, but not any longer and not any darker. And so I've already walked through the longest, darkest tunnel that a daddy will ever have to walk through. What I need to tell you is that I never took one step of that walk alone. You see, the whole walk, you had this hand. God had this hand. So I want to share something with you I know this morning. I don't believe this. I don't suspect it. I know it from my own experience. There's not anything out there that that thing called the world can throw at me that I can't walk through. As long as I'm here with you and you got this hand, God's got this hand. Because you see, when you got this hand and God's got this hand, both got the power. Both got the power. I tell you folks, this is where the power is. This is where the power is. 31 years, and why are we still going to meetings on a real regular basis? Because of the power. Because of the power. This is where it is. Well, if there's not anything else we've learned in the last 31 years, is we don't run from anymore, we run to. When anything upsetting starts happening in our life, we double up, triple up, we get in the middle of you. Because this is where the answers will be. Where it will be. That's what our life is about today, is learning to do those things. Charlie told you, Bob, our son-in-law, died, massive heart attack, 49 years old, sitting in his chair, had the big book in this hand and a Mountain Dew in this hand. And when the coroner got there, he looked at that and he said, this man never knew what hit him. Because he still had the big book in his hand and the Mountain Dew in his hand. I looked at the corner and I said, let me tell you something. That's just God being good to Mike, or to Bob. God took him on out without hurt. That's a loving God. It's a loving God. Yeah. I've had to have some operations, back operations and stuff like that. And I had to retire. Didn't want to. Fought the doctor. Fought God. The doctor and God won. And after I recovered a little bit where I can move around and do a little bit of stuff, well, our spook, our 120-pound black lab that we've told you about. Spook and I were sitting on top of Serenity Hill there one day. And I looked at Spook, and I said, Spook, the vacuum's done, the grass is cut, the truck's washed. I mean, you ain't got anything to do. And the next words I heard coming out of my mouth, now, I didn't formulate these words, I just heard them coming out of my mouth. The words were, God, this is Bo. I'm up here on top of the hill. Several years ago, I made a deal with you. That wherever we needed to go and whatever you needed me to do, I would go and I would do it. And I left the schedule up to you because you knew that I still had a job. God, you did a real good job of that. But I'm reporting in today to tell you I don't have a job anymore. And I'm available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week to do your work. And all I can tell you is don't have that talk with God unless you're ready to get busy. You're ready to get busy. So now Shirley, two years ago, retired. And our life today is about y'all and us. That's what it's about. Y'all and us. Yeah. I changed my praying a little bit not too long ago because of some talks I had with some people, and I used to pray, God, let me do what you would have me do. And I don't do that anymore. I say, God, let me be what you would have me be. See, I know today that to be what God would have me be, I've got to do what He would have me do. But it's even a little more intense. A little more intense. We're having a blast doing God's work. Suiting up, showing up, doing God's work. We having a blast spending weekends with people like you. Now I'm out of time, so I'm gonna close this thing down. For two reasons, I'm out of time, and I want some fish. You can decide for yourself which one is really. But I want to close this by making a deal with you, and I've made this deal with some people in this room, so I know this deal works. Okay, so I want you to listen and listen closely. All right, I'm one of those Al-Anons that's never seen the burning bush, and I've never experienced the bright light or the cool breeze. But the God that I have in my life today speaks to me more often today than He ever has in my life. So that's what I want you to recognize is that. When God speaks to me, darned if it doesn't look and sound a whole lot like you. So most times when I get messages from God, it comes through you. So now that you know just how important you are to me, here's the deal. I'm gonna keep coming back. Rooms like this full of folks like you. Now your part of the deal is I want you to keep coming back. Rooms like this full of folks like us. Now, if I keep coming back and you keep coming back, just maybe somewhere down the line, our paths will cross again as we trudge this road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you. Thank you.
Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed the podcast. Sobercast is ad-free, and we'd like your help in order to keep it that way. So if you'd like to help us be self-supporting by pledging $1 or $2 a month, visit Sobercast.com and look for the donate links. Thank you very much.